All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And now we shift our focus still to the markets, but we're going to tie in a lot more of the commodity moves, especially in metals, as we are chatting with Axel Merk, President and Chief Investment Officer of Merk Investments. Axel, we have to start off with how you're viewing this broadly based correction in the markets. It's global that we're seeing this correction, and especially in the U.S., we're over 3 weeks into it. Monday was, I think, a scary day for a lot of investors as we saw the Japanese markets, the Nikkei, drop 12%. The U.S. markets followed, but they were down, let's say, 2, 3, 4% broadly, and then have been bought back throughout at least the first half of the week. Axel, do you think that broadly markets, not just in the U.S., but globally, are topping here?
Yeah, great to be with you. As we discussed offline a little bit, this seems very quote-unquote normal, as unusual as the move was, of course, in the Japanese market. Normal in the sense that it has the hallmarks of a market that is topping out. Volatility, the leaders of the previous move are getting tired, getting sold off, their rallies, volatility is picking up. And then there are very strong reversals. Obviously, what happened in Japan was somewhat extreme, but that's the sort of thing that you'd expect after a period of dampened volatility, that the positioning is such that people need to delever and you get margin calls and whatnot. And then suddenly the bids are gone. The markets these days are, the death is skin deep only. And so if there are sellers around, suddenly the buyers say, oh, no, thank you. Right. I mean, we got all these wonderful market makers keeping our spread super tight, but these guys don't want to take any risk. And so if somebody is a forced seller due to a margin call and whatnot, then suddenly the bids are gone. And that's the warning sign for other markets as well. And so gut-wrenching this might have been if one is invested in one of these markets. None of this should have come as too much of a surprise that this sort of stuff will happen. Also, keep in mind, right, the Federal Reserve has been tight for a very long time, Bank of Japan easy for a very long time, and that creates an entrenchment of certain positions, a complacency. The carry trade always has been mentioned. That's a symptom of where we are. And yes, as volatility rises, then all hell breaks loose. But that's nothing too surprising here.
Well, and Axel, I was looking at a chart a buddy of ours sent over that shows Cisco in the dot-com era and what its chart looked like going into 99, 2000, 2001 as it rolled over. And they were overlaying NVIDIA with the Cisco chart and showing it almost on the exact same trajectory. And people have pointed to the Japanese carry trade unwinding as a big part of this. And that absolutely is a factor. But really, NVIDIA started rolling over, you could argue, at the very beginning of July is where it peaked out, and it's been rolling over for weeks now. Do you see this as similar to the dot-com era in the sense that a lot of these valuations got to extreme levels and they started rolling over before more people actually got concerned, and it took weeks and weeks before people started saying, oh, maybe these things are rolling over?
Yes. Yeah, so first of all, I can't, just because my speech is regulated, give specific advice on the video or any other of these securities. That said, one anecdote is the same people, literally the same people that told me in late 99 that they're buying certain tech stocks told me a few weeks ago that they're buying certain tech stocks. And when I heard that a few weeks ago, I figured, well, this is presumably the top for NVIDIA. Obviously, we had some other signs of that with the CEO signing the breast of a woman at some conference. And that's also a sign that maybe we are a bit in toppy territory here. I say that with the caveat that Greenspan warned about irrational exuberance in 1996, and it took until 2000 for the market to turn. One thing in 2000 was that even if one was concerned about valuation, predicting the exact top was very difficult. And obviously, the NASDAQ, I believe, topped in March, and the S&P, I think, might have been only in September. So I'm not the type of person who thinks that it's easy to market time to exactly get the top. And I would, anybody who is a day trader and thinks they can do it, by all means, be my guest. To me, it's much more about risk assessment. Investors should be cognizant of the risk that we might be in a similar situation and stress test their portfolio accordingly. That's how I look at that. I'm just fine to miss out on another rally in some of these stocks. Let somebody else take those gains. I'd rather seek downside protection. And as more people are thinking along the same ways, that in itself then weighs on that segment. And then I think that's part of the reason why it's a process, this topping out process. Buying the dip mentality has to die. It will die very slowly. And that's precisely why these environments are similar, that it takes weeks, if not months, for that mindset to change that you can always buy the dip.
So if you're moving more defensive, do you simply go into cash, go into money market funds that are still paying a pretty decent yield, especially compared to what people could have gotten over the last couple of decades?
Well, that's, of course, an option, except as anybody will tell you that it's very difficult to also get back into the markets, because just as nobody tells you where the top is, nobody will tell you where the bottom is. Monday was a case in point, right? The Japanese market was down 12% and Tuesday was up 10%, right? I mean, try to time this. As you're well aware, we have currently, I think, 1.4 billion in gold and gold miners. It's a space, although that was caught in the downdraft on Monday as well, somewhat at least, that historically provides extensive diversification. So you can try to address it with diversification. Obviously, there's no perfect diversification. You can address it with cash. There are all kinds of ways you can do it. Ultimately, anybody has to be comfortable with the sort of exposure that they have. And I would urge anybody to not assume that what happened in recent years is exactly how it's going to play out going forward, because we have a lot of unwinding of a lot of unusual things. We also have much more micromanagement by the Federal Reserve. So there's going to be a tad different. I personally I stopped adding to my traditional equity portfolio in my personal side a long time ago, and then recently checked that I don't have any Mag 7 exposure in my portfolio. And so I've been taking it in steps. I do have more cash than I would typically hold, but it's not like in 2008 and 2007, for example, late 2007, I sold all my equity portfolio because I was extremely concerned. I've gotten much, much more conservative than I have, but I'm not hiding under a rock, so to speak.
Yeah, Axel, it doesn't seem like it's a crash environment, more of a corrective environment for the markets and maybe letting some of the hot air out of the markets that and the valuations. But it seems like there has been a defensive trade. To your point, more people have been going to cash on the sidelines. There is the move into gold that's done well, despite a lot of what people would have thought of as headwinds. Now things are switching to more of a tailwind environment where we're going to see the rate cutting cycle start off, many people believe, starting in September. The market had factored in this rate cutting cycle way early, you know, almost a year ago now. They were already gearing up for this rate cycle, and most believe it's going to be a series of cuts and that they're going to have to cut at every meeting. What camp are you in? Is this just going to be, you know, an initial 50 basis point or 25 basis point cut, and then that's that? Or do you think it's going to be a series of cuts, and have the markets been right to anticipate the Fed coming to the rescue?
Well, this is the most forecast recession ever, and as you point out, much might be priced in. What historically happens, and I don't think this time is any different, is the market prices in a certain number of cuts because the economy is slowing down, and then surprise, surprise, the slowdown is more significant than previously anticipated. There's a lag effect with Fed policy. We are in a tight environment, and we haven't seen credit spreads really blow out. The junk sector, so to speak, has still been able to borrow. When that happens, it will get a more serious attention by the Fed. The Fed hasn't been concerned about it because we are at 5.5% at the target rate for the federal funds rate. And so they think they have plenty of room to cut. But it also means that I wouldn't be surprised, and indeed it's my baseline, that the Fed will cut more than is priced in because this economy will be weaker. And if you translate that to the markets, there's, of course, a context in which this is happening. It is when you have a harder landing that historically is not good for risk assets, the traditional S&P 500, and it's the sort of environment where the gold miners tend to thrive, where the price of gold tends to thrive. Now, the price of gold has held up, so is there still more room on the upside? That's a fair question. And on the gold mining side, though, that hasn't gotten, although that sector is up, it's not up by any stretch of the imagination as much as you would expect given the price of gold. And so the traditional diversification into that space, in my assessment, may well work if history is any guide. Keep in mind that space is extremely volatile. And so with just a little bit of diversification, you might be able to achieve quite a bit. But yes, I do think that the Federal Reserve will cut more than is currently priced in. And by the way, as we're talking, earlier in the week, there was a 50 basis point rate cut priced in for the September meeting. Now it's kind of 1.5 or so. But 3 rate cuts by November, 4 in December, 5 by January, that's currently priced in. And so the market has turned decisively more negative on the economy, and with that, increased likelihood of more significant cutting.
Yeah, in all fairness, we've seen the markets anticipate more cuts over the last couple of years anyway. These predictions change a lot, but it does seem like the markets, they always want more rate cuts, right? The markets consistently think, they've been trained to think that rate cuts are good. That'll make assets go up. It all depends what environment those rate cuts come in. You mentioned the gold miners then. Let's get right into the miners. Large miners broadly are doing pretty well. The higher quality, let's say mid-tiers and juniors, are doing fairly well. But again, it's still a tough market out there. It's a stock picker's market for these mining stocks. Axel, what drives more interest into these stocks? And have we seen, in your eyes, any more interest into some of the ETFs, any movements behind the scenes that you've noticed that gives you some encouragement that more money, more people are paying attention?
Yeah. So first, one more comment on the previous topic, whether the Fed comes to the quote unquote rescue. The Fed is not going to come to the rescue simply because equities are down. The Fed is going to come to the quote unquote rescue when they see credit spreads blow out, when they see systemic risk, when the wheels fall off. So when the stress broadens, so to speak, from a mere correction. To the question on the mining sector, yes, the interest has picked up on the physical gold side. There have been some inflows in recent weeks. Nothing dramatic, but a reversal of the trend. On the gold mining side, interest has picked up. I think what's going to drive that more is that other ways of diversification are going to be more disappointing. As a reminder, Bitcoin, for example, sold off quite sharply early in the week as well, acting much more like a risk asset than a quote-unquote safe haven. Given the extreme volatility, of course, we can't call it a safe haven in the crypto assets. But to the extent that the gold miners do well and all the other things line up, we may well get some speculative money into that space, and given the low liquidity in this market, that can lead to some extraordinary gains. And so I do think that what will get people's attention, if the Mag 7 don't do well and the miners do very well, and historically, of course, the junior miners have a higher beta, they're far more volatile. That said, when money first goes into that space, it tends to go to the big companies first, before it spreads to the lower ones. These junior mining companies have realized that the big boys don't seem to have too much of an appetite to acquire them. I think part of that is the big guys have gotten too big, and it's just not worth it to acquire the smaller ones. They rather go to some projects, some copper gold projects that are just bigger, where their resources can be deployed at a scale. And so what we've seen more on the junior side is mergers amongst them. Some of these companies are now merging the exploration companies with the producing companies so that they try to self-finance themselves. So they're getting creative. There's some activity happening. As interest is picking up, as I would think it will continue to as this economy is evolving, I wouldn't be surprised if these companies act as they have historically, and rewarding the patience of investors in this space.
Well, Axel, I'd like to contrast the movements in the gold, the larger senior producers and mid-tier producers that are in the gold ETFs, with the silver stocks, the mid-tiers and the seniors that are in the silver ETFs, and just the response we saw in the market. With gold, GDX got up to a new 52-week high just in July in the GDX, and same thing in the SIL and SILJ. So everything was doing well, but the silver stocks have rolled over a lot harder than the gold stocks. The gold stocks in general have gone up 50%, even 100% in some of the better companies. The silver stock shot up even more. They shot up 100%, even 150%. Some stocks that are mid-tiers even shot up 200%, but they've all rolled over very hard the last couple of weeks, a lot worse than the gold stocks. Obviously, so has the silver price, but do you read anything into the differences between the gold stocks and the silver stocks?
Well, silver's curse is, of course, the industrial use of it, and that just makes it much more volatile, and that makes it sensitive to swings in the economic outlook. And while on the one hand, its intrinsic volatility as a tailwind, as cut expectations increase, the economic headwinds that might reduce the demand for silver just outweigh that at times. Also keep in mind that on the mining side, these price moves are often discounted quite extensively. And so, yes, it's an extremely volatile space. It's also difficult to get, of course, pure silver plays and good silver mining companies on top of that. And so it's a very difficult space. We are very selective in that space in our own work, as much as I may like silver, but it's just a very difficult space to buy the mining companies in.
Well, even recapping some of the recent earnings reports, I thought that these silver companies should be making more money, even if they're not pure silver, then they have a gold component to it. Last quarter, we saw high prices for both. Costs didn't seem to creep up that much. So why can't these silver companies start issuing some noticeable earnings reports?
Yeah, it's a good question. We focus on, I can tell you, on the earnings reports we followed on the gold side. We have seen some very promising cost reductions, costs coming in less than expected. So I, as I mentioned, right, it depends on how well these companies are managed as well. Also, these smaller companies, you just need one little item there that has a disproportionate impact on the earnings. It's not like these large companies that can spread the costs and mitigate some of the risk of any one issue. You just need to have a screw missing somewhere and your earnings report is going to go off on the wrong end, right? But on the gold producer side, we've seen several where we see that the cost inflation we had seen is getting under control. And of course, what will happen is that then the higher gold price in particular for those companies is going to be beneficial.
Well, Axel, you brought up that if the generalists start seeing gold stocks making money because their margins have increased, you have margin expansion narrative instead of a margin contraction narrative, that it may get more attention. When you contrast that with some of the earnings reports we're seeing in the general equities, do you think there's the chance for the gold stocks and maybe the silver stocks to bifurcate from the general markets, even if they were to correct? Could the higher metals prices levitate the precious metals equities different than general equities?
Well, that's, of course, the thesis. That's usually what happens when there's an economic slowdown. Risk assets, traditional equities, perform poorly. The miners perform well because they do well in anticipation of a more dovish Federal Reserve. And that's usually how it plays out, right? And that's part of the reason why the miners are often used as a diversifier. As we discussed earlier, as Corey pointed out, cash is, of course, the safe way to diversify, and that works for some people. But some people want to have a more speculative diversification, and that's exactly why money tends to go into this space when there's a recession. And it's one reason why I think it does matter whether it's a soft landing or hard landing, because in the soft landing, historically anyway, the S&P 500 can do just fine. If the landing is harder, then the S&P does poorly. Now, of course, the context we have, aside from this discussion of how hard the landing is going to be, that the S&P 500 is very top heavy, with the MAG 7 having just outperformed so dramatically. And so one other place, of course, you can go to small cap value, which doesn't have the MAG 7 in them. They haven't done as well in the recent years, but part of it is because we haven't had that recession. Right. And so there are other ways other than gold mining and cash one can diversify. I'm not trying to pick one, any one of them. I don't have a crystal ball. I would just, again, encourage investors to stress test their portfolio.
So, Axel, if we take a step back here, and as much as we focused our careers, a lot of our careers around the metals, and a lot of the people listening to this show are very much into precious metals and the underlying stocks, we do need to accept that markets do change, that they grow up in a way. Is there a potential here that we have seen markets diversify, change so much that investors, while they might come into the precious metal stocks, there are other options out there for them to diversify. And maybe even those highs that we saw in something like GDX back in 2011, which we're still about 50% away from, it's a different market right now. And maybe we won't see that fervor come into the sector because of the other options investors have.
Well, markets rhyme. They don't repeat. They don't repeat in exactly the same way. A key structural thing that has changed is that we have a lot more micromanagement of the economy with the Federal Reserve. The most notable thing is the rescue package they gave a year and a quarter or so ago to the small banks, where they converted this acute problem of having mismanaged interest rate risk and the commercial real estate exposure to a more chronic problem. And so it's that sort of thing that I think does have an impact in the markets. Clearly, one thing that's different is that some of the big tech companies have just dramatic cash flow generation. And so they're not interest rate sensitive. Similarly, of course, some consumers are not as interest rate sensitive if they have these super locked in mortgages. So all of that, of course, has an impact. And then just more broadly speaking, right, we talk about diversification. One of the things in the gold space we talk a lot about is that the price of gold has a near zero correlation to equities. But that's in the long run. In the short run, it can be positive. It can be negative. Sometimes diversification works. Sometimes it doesn't. Investing is supposed to be frustrating, right? There is no guarantee that any of this works. It's when I think about diversification, I'm thinking about all of the above, right? I'm thinking about, I have more cash than normal. I have more gold mining than many other people do. I have more small cap value than many others do. I have invested in forest and other things on the physical side, right? And so diversification can mean many different things. None of us have a crystal ball. I think the role we can play is to alert people that, hey, have you considered this risk? And have you considered this opportunity? Does this work for you? But I think one of the things you're alluding to, has crypto stolen the show? Well, I think that the speculator has been less active in the gold mining space than they historically have been. It's part of the reason why the volatility has been less. And also, of course, many people were disappointed and disillusioned in the mining space. And that said, the speculator is not very loyal and will come back should the gold miners really take off. And so anything is possible, right? But yes, one should always be humble and recognize that the market this time around might just act a little differently.
Well, Axel, I'm just tugging on that string a little bit further. When you brought up the cryptos, I was looking at something yesterday where there's actually not just cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin or Ethereum that are more established and have more of a track record, at least since 2008, which is not a long track record, but it's at least something. But there are new ones coming out all the time that are now called meme stock cryptos. And so they've taken the excitement of meme stock investing, which is a relatively new phenomenon, and they've done it where these coins have actually no value at all. They're not trying to be a store of value. They're actually just funny memes, but they're also cryptocurrencies, and those are still catching a speculative bid. You saw the meme stock environment, the crypto environment, but you've also seen it in biotech. To your point about small caps, there's the small cap value side, but there's also the small cap, very speculative side. Has the speculation broadened out so much that maybe investors won't ever turn back to the juniors in particular because they're just seeing other opportunities to speculate in something that's easier to understand, because mining is not easy for the average investor to get their hands around?
Well, the way I look at it is the 2000s again. Pet.com is not around anymore, but Google is, right? And so similarly, some of the things you mention suggest to me that we're not at the bottom in the market, and that there is a speculative frenzy that's alive and well. Whether that means that money will go to the junior miners or not is anybody's guess. I would think it will, because ultimately investors want to participate in the speculative upside, and that's what some of these junior miners are. They are literally options of striking gold and developing those mines. They will go through different periods of disillusionments and overexcitement. That is part of the cycle in that space. Are there fewer investors than before? Well, of course, one of the structural things that has changed is that this market is very much dominated by ETFs. ETFs are not well suited to fund junior mining companies. And so, yes, it is somewhat of a neglected space. But that doesn't mean that you can't have more interest in that space, and the space can move very aggressively when that interest picks up. And so it's a, I think one needs to be cognizant of it, but there is a lot of damage, so to speak, that has been done for fundamental investors through the many years of zero interest rate policies. A lot of talent is not around anymore. That may well mean that the unwinding of the excesses will take longer, but I think there's always space for value. I mean, if you take Berkshire Hathaway, they're obviously not mining investors, but they just sold a big stake of their Apple investment in the public filings. I'm not giving a recommendation on Apple, but here's a company that's sticking somewhat to its guns. I mean, they used to never sell, and different management teams somewhat there. It's not just Warren Buffett calling the shots, but still, they are okay holding, I think it's $250 billion or so in cash, waiting for value to be there. So there is capital that's patient on the side while the media focuses on the speculators. There's always going to be space for any one particular investment strategy. And I think on the junior mining side, just as much. There is a time and place for it. And I'm actually quite excited with the sort of economic numbers that are coming out and the dislocations we see in the market that the interest will pick up.
Yeah, it's a very good comment there, Axel. And we do need to remember, right? Mining sector, these stocks, they're small in the whole scheme of things. Broadly, they're penny stocks. So just a little bit of money can still get them moving. I do want to quickly ask you about copper, though, because copper went on quite the run through April and May, topped out at over $5 a pound and has gone almost straight down from that time. Now we're back under $4 a pound. Is this simply recession fears taking copper? What's your outlook for copper? How do investors even play that market?
Yes, I mean, I am not going to give advice on copper trading, but yes, it's all of the above, right? It's overproduction, it is recession fears, it's all those dynamics, right? Anybody should be careful touching these things if they don't fully appreciate the dynamics in that space. Part of the reason I focus on the gold miners, it's just much simpler, because the moment you move even to silver, you have many more industrial components and copper, of course, as well. And so the analysis gets more complex. And yes, you do can have these very significant sell-off in any one of these spaces.
All right, Axel, we're going to wrap it up here. Always great chatting with you. Thank you very much for taking time on our show. I will post a link to Merck Investments in the show notes. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. I know it was a crazy volatile week in the middle of summer, too. Seems like that's going to be the standard, the norm for the second half of this year as we move through the election in the U.S., and the rate cutting cycle, whenever that starts and however aggressive that is, how will markets react? That is the big question. Everyone, thanks for tuning in. Please go back through our website, podcast, and YouTube channel by searching The KE Report. Listen to all our daily editorials and company updates, and keep in touch with us through email. Axel, everyone listening, thanks for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.